Your host, MZ.
Hey, Aaron. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's the first time I've been back in the studio for a few weeks, and it looks so fresh and new. It's making me feel just wonderful.
Does look nice in here.
Yeah. I mean, there must be some mistake. We got to give credit, you know. Dennis and Richard and the gang came up here and just really, really swept up all the germs and mess from the studio, and it just made it a wonderful place. So now everybody would want to come here and be a guest. But some people, like the guest today on our program, won't because they're too far away.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
And good morning, good morning, good morning to everyone in the Central California coastal area, Silicon Valley, and throughout California, where you can hear AM 1080 KSCO. It's Michael Z. And I'm here to welcome you all to the two-hour Saturday special, where we're going to be talking about an issue in the news today, Guantanamo Bay, and the prisoners there. So stay with us for the next 2 hours. You'll enjoy yourselves.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
There are approximately 500 detainees at Guantanamo Bay. For the last 3 years, none of these detainees have had legal representation, and there have been reports of poor treatment and abuse. Since global war on terror is a long-term effort, it makes sense for us to be looking at solutions for a long-term problem, said Brian Whitman, Pentagon spokesperson. The administration's answer? Build a prison where Al-Qaeda suspects would be held for the rest of their lives without ever appearing in a court of law. Amnesty International does not agree. You, the listener, seem to agree as you burnt up the phone lines on Wednesday on the midday news at noon. So we are going to revisit this divisive issue. This Saturday on the Saturday special from 10 a.m. to noon with MZ, Amnesty International, and you on your Tune It In and Throw Away the Key radio station, KSCO AM 1080.
Already it smacks of political correctness. So I want to know what the difference... Why don't they just say what it is, prisoner, instead of detainee? I mean, unless there is some sort of a difference. Is there a difference between the terms prisoner and detainee? Let's find out by welcoming our guest, Jamana Musa from Amnesty International. Jamana is in the Government Relations Department of Amnesty International, and her official title is Director of Advocacy for Domestic Human Rights and International Justice. Jamana, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, welcome to the Saturday special on AM 1080 KSCO. We apologize for last week. I don't think you were going to be the scheduled guest, but somebody else from your organization was, and we had to bail out at the last minute because of technical problems. We are very proud of our technical problems, but not when they force us to cancel programs, as what happened last week. But in any case, thanks for being with us today. I believe you can only be with us for the first hour, but if you can stay longer, that'd be great. It is a two-hour program. I'm sure we'll have enough to talk about for the whole program. Can you give us a little history of your organization? I think much of our audience has heard of Amnesty International, but I think you can sort of bring us up to speed if you would, please.
Sure. Amnesty International is a worldwide organization. It's the largest grassroots human rights organization. It was established over 40 years ago, essentially looking at issues of torture and what we call prisoners of conscience, which are prisoners, people who are taken prisoner strictly for their beliefs, whether religious, political, etc., without having advocated or used violence. And so it started many years ago on the premise that a lot of times when different regimes would sort of round up people either for political activity, etc., and throw these people into prisons, it's usually incommunicado, usually done secretly, and that's when governments can sort of do whatever they want. So it started with that notion of this letter writing to let people know, we know you have this person in custody. We want to know, you know, what are their circumstances? Are they being afforded medical, you know, medical staff? Are they being, et cetera, just to sort of start on the premise that once people know, once people are aware, it's much more difficult for governments to sort of hide people away.
Right. So the group has obviously grown to gargantuan proportions. What's your membership?
I believe it's 1.7 million people worldwide.
My gosh. And I'm sorry, when did it start? What year?
I don't remember the exact year. I apologize for that, but it was over 40 years ago.
Oh, my, wow, because I don't remember hearing about Amnesty International before maybe 15 or 16 years ago, whatever. Regardless, what is, do you know the difference between the word detainee and prisoner?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's been a lot of sort of creative use of language by the current U.S. administration. Many people think they just sort of coined this term detainee to sort of avoid the idea that they're prisoners, just like they've coined the term enemy combatant to sort of get around issues of legal status. That, of course, doesn't in any way abrogate U.S. responsibilities under either domestic or international laws, but it's been set out there as if they're detainees, not prisoners, or they're enemy combatants, not prisoners of war, anybody with any status, that somehow laws don't apply.
Hmm. Well, yeah, to me, it's exactly the same thing. All right, so let's move to Guantanamo Bay here. Now, apparently, not last Wednesday, but the Wednesday before, the subject of our Midday News at Noon program was this topic, and the phones evidently went wild here with people mm-hmm. from our audience who apparently feel that... I apologize. I didn't hear the program, and I just wasn't able to take the time to get a recording of it. But apparently, quite a number of people in our audience feel that when you have a situation like we have now, the U.S. Constitution protections don't necessarily apply. And so it certainly is a contentious subject, and you know, we want to encourage people to give us a call and participate, because we have a lot more time to discuss this topic today. We have a 2-hour format rather than a 42-minute format, as we do during the week. So if you want to give us a call and weigh in on the subject, regardless of your point of view, please call us at area 831-479-1080 or 477-1340. You can email us to mz@ksco.com, or you can fax us to 475-2967. Not positive the fax machine is working. For some reason, it was ringing and ringing yesterday and not answering. So I don't know whether that means that it needs ink, or it needs paper, or it needs something. But try it and let us know if you're faxing something and nothing's happening, okay? And then we'll know that there's something wrong for sure. It's the KSCO Saturday Special at 14 minutes past 10 a.m. on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. It's MZ with special guest Jumana Musa. I said it right, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
From Amnesty International. Okay, so give us the official point of view here of your organization.
I'm just going to preface it by saying it's not just the official point of view of our organization, but we tend to find a lot of, not just other human rights organizations, but former military folks, and even some folks in the military who maybe can't speak out, who tend to agree with the same position, which is that, you know, at this point, in the way this entire sort of operation has progressed, the U.S. administration in many ways has dug itself into a hole, but the idea that they can just build camps for people who may be suspected of crime, put them in jail forever without a trial, without an opportunity to challenge any evidence against them, without charges against them, it's completely illegal. Whether if you're looking at U.S. federal law is one thing, but even if constitutional law doesn't apply, that doesn't get rid of U.S. obligations under international law. It doesn't get rid of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It doesn't get rid of customary international norms and the way countries behave with each other. And so, again, this idea of permanent, indefinite, preventative detention is completely abhorrent to any system of justice, especially a system of justice like the United States, which is very much looked at around the world as an example of what good democratic jurisprudence should be.
So basically the U.S. is thumbing its nose at justice, basically, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what gets confused a lot of times in these conversations, nobody in either Amnesty International or any other organization is saying, no, you shouldn't be able to, you know, investigate people. You shouldn't be able to charge people who are involved, you know, in attacks on civilians and crimes against humanity. I mean, absolutely, we promote that. We want people to be held accountable for the acts that they've committed. But what we are saying is that you can't just round up people. And, you know, there's no even set number of how many people are at Guantanamo. You said it yourself. There's approximately, even the Pentagon website will tell you approximately how many people are being held at Guantanamo Bay. That in and of itself is a huge concern. This is an extremely controlled environment. This is not a place of confusion. This is not a battlefield. This is a place where nobody gets in and out without Pentagon permission, without question. And so the fact that they're still giving approximate numbers is just in and of itself a reason for concern. What we're looking at here is people who are picked up maybe in Afghanistan, maybe in Pakistan, maybe transferred from other countries, people who were sold to U.S. forces by the Taliban. And when I said sold, they were offering a bounty for anybody that by the Northern Alliance. So anybody that Northern Alliance forces brought to them and said, well, this person's Taliban or this person's Al-Qaeda, which certainly gave the Northern Alliance, who, even if they did work with the U.S. in this conflict, weren't necessarily the most upstanding of groups. It gave them a monetary incentive to hand people over. So people ended up in Guantanamo in any one of a number of ways. Many, many high-level government officials or people who had dealt with Guantanamo have recognized that they don't have the so-called big fish down there. You're not finding people in Guantanamo who are responsible for planning the attacks on September 11th. Even the four people who have been charged and have started somewhat their proceedings in front of the military commission are not being charged with any kind of high-level crime. Most of them are just being charged with conspiracy crimes. And so when you look at the way people were brought there, who may or may not be there, the processes by which they've been judged, which have been riddled with problems, and you know, I'm sure we can go into that over the course of the interview, the answer to that is not to just put them all in jail forever and throw away the key, because at this point it would be very difficult to prosecute any cases against them.
I can't argue with anything you've said, so I won't. Can anybody out there in the audience argue with anything that was said? I mean, it brings to mind years ago, for many years, even to this day, people say, whatever you do if you go to Mexico, do not get into any kind of trouble. Don't get caught with illicit drugs or anything, because what will happen is you will be incarcerated and you will not be treated with due process, and you damn well better have relatives here that or friends that can go after you, because otherwise you'll never be heard from again. It almost sounds like that's what's happening with our country, except elsewhere.
And I think that is the concern. I mean, there's absolutely no question about the fact, you know, many people say, well, the U.S. has the right to defend itself. The United States doesn't just have a right, they actually have a duty to defend their citizens from attacks. There's no question about that. But what we've been saying from the beginning is that the best way to do that is to promote the rule of law and human rights, because when you set forth a regime where you're saying laws only apply when they benefit us, when we say they do, when we want them to, what you're doing is you're promoting lawlessness, in effect. And other countries are following suit. Now, I think the other part of the argument that often doesn't get heard is many times it's presented that this is a very different kind of war. We need these different kind of things. Well, a lot of regimes have done this before, the idea of preventative detention, the idea of being able to lock people away without a term.
Yeah, it is a different world post 9/11. I mean, no question about that.
There's no
question
about that.
You won't argue with that.
But these are not new tactics. The concern here is that we have the United States doing this. The United States, in country reports and over the years, has criticized countries for doing this exact same thing. Now the United States is in a position where we're sort of leading the way on this. And in addition, if we are to find at some point U.S. soldiers or U.S. citizens held in these similar situations, it's going to be very tough for the United States to go to another country and say, look, you just can't hold our citizen indefinitely without charge.
Okay.
When that country can turn around and say, why not? You have 10 of ours.
So what you want is the detainees... a.k.a. prisoners, to be charged and dealt with, right? I mean, that's what you're advocating.
From the beginning, we said you can't just hold them indefinitely. They either need to be charged and tried before a recognized system of law, or they need to be released.
Would that include a military tribunal? Would you recognize that?
Not in the form that they're currently set up, no.
Hmm.
That doesn't mean a court-martial under the Uniform Code of Military Justice is a far cry from the military commission proceedings that are going on or that have started to proceed in Guantanamo right now. But we absolutely do not see those commissions as legitimate in the form they're set up, and there's many reasons for that.
How are they set up now? because it doesn't sound like anything is set up. There's nothing happening.
Well, that's part of the problem. I think, you know, again, this was a place where the administration went outside many, many, many years of established law, whether you're talking about the Geneva Conventions, whether you're talking about the Uniform Code of Military Justice, whether you're talking about, you know, 50 or more years of jurisprudence on due process in the United States or other sort of internationally recognized forms of law to create an entirely new system. And the way the system was set up is they're essentially making up the rules as they go along. And I mean that quite literally. And it's done a number of things. It's caused
well, that doesn't sound right. And I don't think we had a. Do you know if there was an Amnesty International a guest on the Noontime program? Because I don't know that.
Not that I'm aware of. Normally I would get these calls, and I know I wasn't on it.
Right. Okay. So apparently we have a different audience today because what you are saying and what I am agreeing with doesn't. It seems to ring true with most of our audience because there are no callers. So, interesting. Very, very interesting. 1025. So I guess we have to say something controversial for there to be calls. That's okay. It's okay. It's fine. I want to, what do you say to people that say that, that it's a different world after 9/11 and that, how does somebody get themselves, arrested or detained in the first place unless they have been observed doing something wrong? I mean, and if that's the case, isn't there a good chance that they're, if they get out, they're going to do something again?
Well, I mean, I think we're talking about two things here, right? One of them is, you know, again, we're not saying that the U.S. cannot engage in intelligence gathering. Okay, and I want to tread lightly on that subject because that doesn't mean the sort of wide-scale, you know, surveillance and data mining that people have concerns of under laws like the Patriot Act and others that have been passed. But I'm talking about intelligence. The United States has always been engaged in intelligence in foreign countries. I mean, this is not new. We know this. We have a CIA. We have a network of intelligence bodies in the United States government, and that's valid. And if they gain intelligence that can, you know, that can show something is in place, they can take action in a number of ways. You know, and there's precedents there, both sort of in U.S. law and international law. So again, it's not that the United States can't engage in any type of intelligence gathering and surveillance, or to step in when there is actually activity happening. The issue we're having here is what's looking like just large roundups of people who have, and there's been numbers of reports of torture as well from Afghanistan, from Iraq, from Guantanamo, which for, you know, for a very long time were put off, oh, that's not happening, these are exaggerated. But what's happened most recently, the ACLU and other organizations sued with a Freedom of Information Act request on these documents. And many of the allegations of torture that were coming out of Guantanamo, the tactics that either former or current detainees were reporting showed up in FBI reports where they're saying we have these concerns, these things have been happening.
Give us some examples, please.
An example being,
yeah,
there was one FBI member, I believe it was an email, and you have to forgive me if it's not the correct form, but there was one email where they talked about detainees and interrogations being shackled in a fetal position to the floor, left there for 18 and 24 hours, having found to have urinated or defecated on themselves. There was reports of detainees left in a room with, that was over 100 degrees, music blaring, a long periods of time where an FBI agent went in and found this detainee who had been there for a number of hours with tufts of hair all over the floor because he had literally been pulling his hair out. What they are calling false flag, which is putting a detainee on a plane.
Who had been pulling hair out?
The detainee was literally just in this room. It was over 100 degrees, music blaring, bright lights for, I don't remember, it was 18 or 24 hours, and by the time this FBI agent found him, he'd literally been pulling out his own hair sitting there. There was reports that were then verified of female soldiers approaching detainees during the holy month of Ramadan, sitting on their laps, rubbing parts of their bodies. So a number of allegations that had come from detainees where they were saying there's none of this going on in Guantanamo, there's no abuse, all ended up in FBI reports that were uncovered from a Freedom of Information Act request. So, you know, again, you're talking about people who are not just picked up and sort of put away, but clear evidence now of a pattern or practice of torture that sort of followed the U.S. from Afghanistan to Guantanamo to Iraq, whereas the one thing about torture that's always been known to be true, and certainly morally it's wrong, and there's many prohibitions against it, but it also gives you unreliable evidence, and that's always known to be true. That's how come even in U.S. courts, you can't even use testimony that's been coerced from a defendant.
Yeah.
Coercion does not rise to the level
of
torture.
That's right. Okay, well, we're going to put out the phone numbers again. We do have one caller. It's 1025 on AM 1080 KSCO, the Saturday special with MZ and Jemana Musa. You can give us a call if you want to talk about the subject of prisoner treatment at Guantanamo Bay and the fact that they seem to be being held indefinitely with no due process and no trials even planned. What do you think about that? Give us a call, 479-1080. Or 477-1340, go on the air. Aaron, is Jemana locked in on the phone lines, or do we need to hit it again here? Do you know how to do that?
She should be good.
Okay. Okay. Now I think you're locked in here. So, Jemana, forgive us if we lose you, we will call you right back. Okay. But let's take our next caller here, our first caller, Doug in San Lorenzo Valley. Doug, you're on the air on AM 1080 KSCO.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to go to the detainee issue, and I was just curious how they refer to Leonard Peltier, who's been held by the U.S. government for a number of years. Now, he did murder a FBI agent, but he's been held for so much longer than, say, your average Joe that would have, say, murdered his wife. It's probably out on the street at this point in time.
Good question, Jemana.
Well, I think they'd be hard-pressed to get around calling him a prisoner. I mean, he certainly went through a trial and was convicted. And there are a number of questions about the Peltier case, and I can't say that I'm the most familiar with them, but I'm aware of some of them. So, you know, in that sense, really the use of the term detainee came up in this age of this so-called war on terror. And I think they're trying to distinguish it from prisoners in many ways, because even prisoners have rights to some degree.
And also, on another aspect of that, are there any Americans that are currently being held at Guantanamo Bay as detainees?
No, the only American that was there was Yasser Hamdi when they found out he was an American, because that's another thing about the system in Guantanamo, and in particular, one of the issues we have with the military commissions is that they set them up only for non-citizens, which means that they set up a separate legal regime for non-citizens than for citizens, even if those citizens, whether it was Yasser Hamdi or John Walker Lynn, were picked up in the same place, maybe in the same exact circumstance, maybe even next to these guys. They get a different standard of justice. So that's a concern of ours. But Yasser Hamdi was the only person, U.S. citizen, who was known to be held there. He was transferred to the United States and instead held on a naval brig, also labeled an enemy combatant. His case went through the court up to the Supreme Court, which said quite definitively, no, you can't hold a U.S. citizen with no process. He has to be able to challenge the basis for his detention and have access to an attorney for that stated purpose. And as his case was preparing to come to court to give him an opportunity to challenge his detention, rather than bring any evidence into open court, the U.S. instead sent him to Saudi Arabia, where he had been living. I believe he had grown up there. He was born here, I think, when he was about 3 or 5, and I don't remember the exact age. Him and his family moved back to Saudi Arabia. So they basically didn't choose to go to court or air anything in public, but said, if you give up your U.S. citizenship, go back to Saudi Arabia and don't come to the U.S. for 10 years, we'll just leave the whole thing alone. So that was the only U.S. citizen in Guantanamo. There is currently another U.S. citizen who's still in custody, currently labeled an enemy combatant, which is Jose Padilla. His case also came before the Supreme Court. He was picked up in Chicago, not Afghanistan. But his case did come before the Supreme Court, and they sent it back down on a technicality, saying he had filed it in the wrong district.
But he's not being detained in Guantanamo.
No, but he's being detained as an enemy combatant still at a naval brig here in the United States.
I see.
So they're still detaining people. They just label it differently. They're labeled an enemy combatant instead of a detainee.
No, they're labeling people. That's what they're calling people in Guantanamo as well, as enemy combatants. It's just for U.S. citizens. They won't hold them in Guantanamo. They'll hold them on a naval brig up here in the States somewhere.
Because that's actually kind of scary. From the standpoint of that, what if they decided to start labeling a lot of us here in this country as enemy combatants because we don't agree with some of the things the government's currently doing, as in this particular instance?
Maybe that's why we're not getting...
They might start building prisons everywhere.
Maybe that's why we're not getting as many phone calls as I thought, that because people might be afraid of that, huh?
Well, I'd like to say, I think the caller makes a very good point, which is a lot of times whenever... and even historically, not just this particular administration, but historically, whenever the U.S. government has sort of taken some of these more extreme measures, their first answer to people's questions is always, oh, but this is a non-citizen. This doesn't apply to you. You don't have to worry about it. And every single time it's transitioned into laws that are used against citizens. And I think this is a perfect example. They said, you know, these military commissions that we set up are only for non-citizens. Guantanamo is only for non-citizens. And then they started labeling U.S. citizens as enemy combatants and then putting them on naval brigs, saying that they had no rights to attorneys or to be charged, etc. So every time the U.S. government has started something saying, well, this only applies to these other people, it's always then sort of morphed into laws that apply to U.S. citizens as well. And that's just yet another reason to be concerned about these policies and practices.
Okay. Doug, are you, can you argue with anything that Jumana has said?
Oh, not at all. I agree completely because of my fear that just as she said, that sure, they're saying this is for non-citizens at this point, but once they get this prison built and it's filled up, they may decide to build a second or a third or a fourth or a tenth, and the next people to start filling it up might be us citizens because we've voiced concern about some of these things that the government's doing where it doesn't have a legal right to be there.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, many thanks for your call to the Saturday special. That was Doug in San Lorenzo Valley. Here comes Santa Cruz Mike. Let's see what he has to say. You're on the air, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
Another interesting show.
Good. Can you disagree with this fine lady that we have on as a guest?
I agree with her, and I agree with your last caller.
Uh-huh.
Right now, there is a growing fascism within the United States from our politicians. And what we see happening in Guantanamo Bay, now we have to break the back of Islam, there's no doubt about it. It cannot be allowed to grow and prosper and continue to destroy societies around the world. However, one of the hallmarks of the United States and being an American is justice and fair play. And we're not seeing that there. Right now, remember the guy who was arrested, a week or two ago for shooting a laser up an airplane?
Yes.
He was charged under the as a terrorist. Now, what he did was stupid. And he shouldn't have done it, and there's got to be some law somewhere to deal with him. But we're already using these terrorist laws, these special laws to deal with terrorism. We're already using it on our own citizens. And we will continue to use these against our citizens. And people have much to be afraid of. What's it going to be used against next? Is it going to be used against illegal aliens?
Right. Mike, did you happen to hear the other program, the HOPE program that started this?
No, I didn't.
Okay, yeah, I didn't either. I wish someone would call in who did.
I'd like to pick up on something that Mike said. I mean, first,
please.
I do want to say that, you know, what we're looking at here, though, is not necessarily breaking the back of Islam. I mean, it's a religion that about a fifth of the world's population subscribes to, the majority of which are just peaceful believers. And so what we're looking at is armed groups.
Yeah, you want to break the back
No, we cannot separate the two. Because they are not doing it they're not doing it like a Timothy McVeigh, I'm mad at America. They're doing it in the name of Islam.
I don't want to get into this argument too deeply. Many people will justify their actions through religion. That doesn't mean that the religion's at fault.
We have civil wars all around the world involving countries with Islam opposing the governments. It's not a handful of individuals. The basic teachings of Islam are contrary to democracy and a republic form of government. The whole core, when you talk about peaceful Islam, when you talk about peaceful Muslims, you're talking about Muslims and Islams who are compromising their values. That's what you're talking about. You need to read the Quran.
That's actually not true at all, sir.
That is true.
I don't want to turn this into an argument on religion.
Well, then you shouldn't be saying what you're saying if you don't want to argue about it. You shouldn't be saying that Islam is peaceful unless you want to argue about it, because it's not peaceful. It's never been peaceful historically.
I mean, if you want I'll ask Mike the man at the station if he wants the conversation to turn this direction. I'll be happy to engage him on it. But what I do want to follow up on in terms of what you said is that certainly when you start talking about adherence to the rule of law and the way these laws are being used, I think you're absolutely correct. Not just the man with the lasers, but I know the Patriot Act, which was sort of set up as the hallmark of how we need to look at this sort of new situation and track down terrorists. What it's turned into is they were using it to look at people who own strip clubs in Las Vegas.
That's right. And you know what I think it's ultimately going to be used for? As our politicians continue to sell us out, and as our politicians continue that whoremongering effect of big corporations closely tied with our politicians, so they're all bought and sold and paying for each other.
Did you say whoremongering?
Whoremongering, yes.
Oh.
Anyway, with that relationship and the financial stability of our country deteriorating, that they are putting in place laws and rules and regulations so that they will have some way to easily control their populations. Well, instead of everybody getting mad and calling in on a talk show and griping and bellyaching, they're going to get out in the streets and start protesting. They're going to have ways to control people and make the people afraid. It's going to be like communist China, where a man can point his finger at you if he has a proper uniform on, and you're going to say yes, sir, no, sir, and look down at the pavement and do what you're supposed to do.
I think, you know, a further indication of what the caller is saying is even if you look at some of the people who sought to protest at both the Democratic and Republican National Convention, they were set in separate areas of the city. In Boston at the Democratic National Convention, they were literally had caged off areas. So, and they're calling these, you know, and I think this to me is very Orwellian, they're calling them so-called free speech zones.
Of course.
So saying you can demonstrate, but only if you sort of stay in this caged off area off to the side, you know, 5 miles from where anything is happening. There's currently an argument about this week's upcoming inauguration and trying to keep anybody away from the parade route that's not a Bush supporter.
But so let's take it up another level. It's not just Republicans. It's both parties who are milking all of these news laws, all of this legislation. Where is the opposition? Where is someone stomping their feet and getting mad? I don't hear anyone.
That's because they're sort of penned off somewhere 5 miles from anywhere.
Well, they're afraid. Think if you're a politician, and let's say that you're the minority politician in that. Let's say that maybe in the Democratic Party and certain areas of Congress, well, maybe you have some little shadowy past or some little third-person connection that maybe could damage you under some of this new legislation. I mean, there's so many ways that people, when you have lots of laws, good lawyers, and an aggressive prosecutor or an aggressive attack on the laws, you can just about find enough on someone so you can control them. And that's what we're developing here with these new laws that are very vague and already being abused, and the ink has barely been signed.
Jemana?
Have you
learned something new from Santa Cruz, Mike?
Well, a lot of what he's talking about is also issues we follow, which is the way things were set up in the Patriot Act.
I would say everything that he said you agree with, except one item that you didn't want to talk about,
I'm willing to talk about that. I certainly do disagree with him on that, and I'm not.
That's a whole other show. The main thing is that we need to be united. That America is under attack by our politicians, our so-called servants. We are under attack by our servants and by the large corporations that fund them. And we can't separate the two. It's foolish. Either party, we cannot separate them. George Soros doesn't get his will done when he contributes $15 million to the Democratic Party. Murdoch News Corp, when they contribute $8 or $9 million, they don't. These big corporations control our politicians, and they are using these laws to control us also.
Do you think there should be laws stating that large corporations may not contribute to politicians?
Hey, Mike, it used to be against the law for a person to go in government office. If you read the original state constitutions, it was against the law for any government official to uphold that office if in any way he received profit from that office.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that sounds good. Do you think we'll ever return to that way of doing things?
No.
But should we?
Here's the reason why. That we were so great in the past. It wasn't because of our laws. It wasn't because of our constitutions. Most countries in South America have republic constitutions just like us. It hasn't benefited us. The uniqueness of America, we had a great people. We had great immigrants. We had a great spirit. We had a great sense of justice and fair play, and that was revealed in many ways in our constitution.
And now they're all dogs.
In many ways, our society has deteriorated. We don't have that greatness anymore, and our laws reflect it. The corruption in our judicial system reflects it.
No offense to the dogs out there. I mean, the real dogs.
Yeah, I like my dog, by the way.
Yeah, excuse me.
But
yeah,
I think this is what Amnesty International is trying to do.
Uh-huh.
Because above, you know what? This is going to sound terrible. It would be better that we let them go to show that we are a just and fair nation, or we prosecute them, and more damage come from them down the road than it is for this injustice now and make us look bad in the eyes of the world.
Who's going to disagree with what you just said? Why do you say this is going to sound terrible? It doesn't sound terrible at all. It sounds logical, and it sounds right.
Because most people live in fear, and they'd rather destroy the lives of 1,000 people to save a possible loss of 10,000 on the road in case they're wrong.
And something I want to point out there is we're not just talking about destroying the lives of people who may or may not be wrongly held in Guantanamo or Afghanistan or elsewhere. But many of these folks have families.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Because either this person is their primary breadwinner, their children who haven't seen their father, parents who are elderly, who are getting sick with worry. I mean, literally, we have been in contact with many families of people who are currently held in Guantanamo, and this has taken a very significant toll on them. And I think even people here in the United States, even if a member of your family has committed a crime, you at least you know where they are. You're able to have contact. You can have visits. I mean, even if they're in prison for the rest of their life, you're not in a complete black hole. You're not in this vacuum of information where you don't know how they're being treated or what's happening, no ability to see them, communicate, send photos.
Yes.
Very basic things, because even if, let's say somebody down in Guantanamo is responsible for very bad things, and you know, you could fill in the blank there, that doesn't mean that every person in their family deserves to suffer, you know, sometimes years of not even knowing where their son or
well,
husband is.
I am failing to see why we even did this subject on the Saturday special today, because there's no controversy, really. Because,
hey, Mike, you know, there's another thing to think about, too, as far as this. Our media is to blame for this. Think about the Scott Peterson case. You know what? There are thousands of pregnant women killed every couple of years, and it's a tragedy. It's horrible. But while we had all of our attention focused on this guy, the media did it. Not us, by the way. The media shoved it down our throats so that every time you turned the TV on, that's all. You didn't have any choice. That's all that was on there, because they determined what's supposed to get us emotionally aroused, et cetera, et cetera. While, in fact, the greatest, and they were trying, and almost they got compassion
Mike,
for him.
They act based on ratings and response.
You know what? The ratings are crap. You don't even use the ratings, Mike, because you know they don't mean crap. Think about that.
I'm going to disagree with what you said. I agree with you that the ratings don't mean crap, and the reason we don't use them is not because of that, but because we're not licensed to use them. Okay? We don't choose to pay the $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a month. The last time I checked, fee, what I call an extortion fee,
and that is extortion, by the way.
You know, for the right to be able to use something that's crap to begin with.
Yeah.
However, that is what the world goes round on, Mike.
And see, that's what's wrong. Think about this. There's less people watching the news than ever before, and they're still asking that declining population to tell us what you want to hear. Why don't they just give us news that's meaningful and then see if maybe people will actually come back and listen to the news again? Like, we're watching Scott Peterson when we want to know more about what's going on in Guantanamo Bay. We want to know more what's really going on in Iraq, not what the polls from a handful of declining population, declining people watching the news want to hear or see. Why don't we have some innovative news? Like, what, you know what the sad thing is?
Innovative news?
Innovative news. Actually reporting news.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah. Instead of reporting what's going on. Instead of commentaries disguised as news.
That's right. You know what? See, I don't want to hear Bill O'Reilly's idea of the news, or Dan Rather's. I want to hear the facts and let us decide the emotions we would have put in with it, the way it used to be.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But something has happened so that we as citizens...
Now you're talking about a subject I'd love to talk about. But anyhow, we have gotten off the track. Mike, always great to hear from you. Always liven things up. Appreciate it.
Hey, take care, and thank you, Amnesty International.
Okay. There goes Santa Cruz Mike. We have Jason in San Diego listening on the Internet. Oh, I just dropped Jason. I didn't mean to do that. Jason, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a little comment about, you know, the media. It turns out that... if you go back to the 1970s, and especially you take a look at, say, the Church Committee, you'd find out that, you know, in their investigations, they had uncovered that the FBI and that the CIA are actually, you know, infiltrated in American media. And I think that it was Carl Bernstein, there was a 1977 Rolling Stone article that he wrote that basically showed that there were 400 CIA agents working within the United States media, at least at that time. That was nearly 30 years ago now. And I think that we've been living in a police state, probably the most sophisticated police state in the world. And I'm a member of Amnesty International, but I really do think that that Amnesty really needs to start looking more at home at what's going on, not just at Guantanamo Bay and these egregiences that go on overseas, but also here at home. Because I think that really what these new terrorism laws are aimed at is basically erasing... you know, basically letting them do COINTELPRO again, which was the counterintelligence program that the FBI had ran for years in this country, for decades, under J. Edgar Hoover. And, you know, that's what I'm really afraid of, is that all of the abuses that the FBI has committed, you know, in the past against Americans just trying to express their political views and use the Bill of Rights, is going to be basically allowed again, and many of the people, a lot of even conservatives now, some of them are saying, hey, we can't.
But maybe the word you mean, instead of allowed again, you mean invoked again.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that it's amazing if you just take a look at what happened to, say, Martin Luther King, a man that the FBI, they actually planted news stories, you know, in national newspapers, even political cartoons to, you know, to lambaste him and ultimately to steer him into the Lorraine Motel where they shot him and killed him. And I think that, you know, now that, you know, just trying to bring in, you know, Martin Luther King into this because this is, you know, this is his, you know, his holiday, is that we should remember that, when it was actually looked into. In fact, there was a court case in December of 1999 brought by Coretta Scott King under, Cheddar lawyer William Pepper bring this court case. And the jury had actually found that, that the U.S. government was involved in the assassination of Martin Luther King. So even right here at home, we have, you know, clear cases where the government's involved in assassinating, you know, political, you know, leaders. And now under this auspices of the terrorism law, I think that there's going to be a lot more of this going on.
Jason, are you a normal listener to KSCO?
No, I was.
You're a member of Amnesty.
My Winamp. I'm a. I listen to you guys on the internet, and I just heard this.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, so you, because you're a member of Amnesty International, I thought that might have tipped you off to our station and for you to listen today. But you're saying you do listen. Are you a transplant from Santa Cruz to San Diego?
No, I just listen to different radio stations on the internet because down here in San Diego, most talk radio stations are very far right. I'd really say neo-fascist. And
well, that's what we're characterized as by the people who run our city in Santa Cruz here.
Really?
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
They're pretty extreme.
Well, I mean, but, to me though, it's
we're a station for everybody. In fact, our slogan for years has been "Finally a voice for everyone who chooses to use it." Right.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, to me, it just seems that that, you know, the media, you know, is basically controlled in this country by the government, but it's surreptitious. I would say that, I wouldn't say that the local media is, but I would definitely say that every national media figure is in some way controlled by, you know, by the federal government. And, you know, that's just going from sources, you know, like Carl Bernstein and in Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, this is
fascinating subject. Love to get into it, but we want to move on. Keep to the subject today. Appreciate your call to the Saturday special. I hope you'll call again.
Thank you.
Thank you. There goes Jason in San Diego. It is 47 minutes past 10 a.m., hour number one of the KSCO Saturday special. One open line at 479-1080, maybe another one at 477-1340. If you want to email mz@ksco.com, I will check it during the break here. And speaking of breaks, it's time for a commercial break. Stay with us, as they would say on NPR and, you know, local non-commercial stations. We're a commercial station, but I can sort of use their terminology. Please listen to the sponsors that make this program possible.
When most people eat, they don't consider what happens to their food after it's been swallowed. Calories and nutrients are taken by the digestive system to feed our bodies, but what happens when we can't absorb the nutrients we ingest? Here's pharmacist Benjamin Fuchs to tell us how to better digest our food.
Food and digestion is the hardest thing that we do to our bodies on a regular basis, trying to digest our food. It creates a lot of stress on the body and produces a lot of toxins in the body as well. So a food holiday is always a good idea, no matter what your health issue is, or even if you're just plain healthy, it's a good idea to take a break from food once a week. And when you take a break from food, you want to make sure that you're drinking lots of veggie juices. Did you know just chewing your food appropriately can be a wonderful way to eliminate inflammatory conditions and can be a wonderful way to improve longevity? Just simply chewing your food can allow food to be digested more appropriately. The less we eat, the better. Now, there's different kinds of digestive enzymes. Proteolytic enzymes can have some really important effects, most especially for helping reduce inflammation. In fact, bromelain and papain alone have been shown to reduce inflammation due to trauma, but you also get secondary benefits, and that is improved digestion. Improved digestion can help eliminate toxins that make it into the bloodstream. Those toxins can actually be simply pieces of food that didn't get digested. So digestive enzymes are a wonderful strategy for taking care of that, and the digestive enzymes should be taken before meals.
Balance out your digestive system by taking American Longevity's Ultimate Enzymes. Each bottle contains a proprietary enzyme complex formulated to support all aspects of digestion, aids in detoxification, and at $19 a bottle wholesale, you'll be properly digesting fats and proteins without eating away your hard-earned dough. Give your body what it needs for proper digestive health. American Longevity's Ultimate Enzymes. To order or to pick up American Longevity products, call Scott or Jose at KSCO Radio, 831-475-1080. That's 831-475-1080.
Michael, I'm not going to tell you one more time. Get out of that bed.
I don't wanna.
Please, you're going to be late for school.
I hate school. It's boring.
Is your child attending a school that simply doesn't wake him up? A school with no art, no music, no drama, no PE, zero one-on-one attention, and abbreviated schedules? Does he feel confused and lost in the crowd? Imagine your child looking forward to school on Monday. The Aptos Academy, where the arts enhance the academics, provides a complete education, and each student from pre-K to 8th grade can progress as fast as their interest and ability allows. Located on a beautiful 5-acre campus just off Highway 1 and San Andreas Road, the Aptos Academy is an independent, non-denominational school which offers an exceptional and affordable education. Come to our open house Sunday, January 23rd from 2 to 5 p.m. Call 688-1080 for more information or to schedule a personal tour.
The Aptos Academy, where school is never boring.
Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet. GotNet specializes in business services. Whether you need a T1 or T3 or just a place to host your website, GotNet has a solution to fit your needs. GotNet offers server co-location and custom website development. We have e-commerce servers, streaming audio and video servers, and Cold Fusion and database servers available to handle your hosting needs. GotNet understands that businesses rely on the Internet, and we work hard to assure fast, reliable service. Call GotNet today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. GotNet. Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet. GotNet specializes...
Hello, I'm Robert Stangero. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangero family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Howard Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
KSCO AM 1080, the station for intelligent people only. Stupid people must tune to another station immediately.
And we are dead serious about that. Stupid people must change to another station immediately. We understand that people are human and make mistakes and tune into the intelligent radio station. But if you're not intelligent, you shouldn't be here. So we'll give you a couple minutes, 30 seconds here to switch the dial. We have received one email from a face and a name from the past. It's none other than Ellie Kramer, who used to be a talk show host on this station. I don't know if he's been doing any fill-in. I understand he's been under the weather a little bit, but is getting and has gotten a lot better. And the subject says, of the email says, aren't you getting just a little bit fed up with all this bull bleep? Michael, 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 there has to be something better to use the radio station for. Now, I don't agree with that. I mean, I might have agreed with it earlier on in the program when there didn't seem to be many calls and everybody was agreeing with everybody else, but I don't agree with that now. So, you know, Ellie, you know, I don't agree with you at all. I mean, this is a wonderful topic. It's turned into a wonderful topic. Speaking the topic, by the way, is treatment of Guantanamo Bay detainees, also known as prisoners, and we have a special guest from the Government Relations Department of Amnesty International. The lady is named Jumana Musa. Have I said it correctly?
You said it correctly every time?
Every time. Okay, good, because I just, you know, see if we can keep that record going. If you want to give us a call, our numbers are 479-1080 or 477-1340, each in area 831. If you want to email us, as did Ellie, it's mz@ksco.com. We've got Margaret, Bruce, Westside Al, and Pat holding. Thank you all for holding. Let's go to our next caller, who's been holding the longest by far, and that would be none other than Westside Al himself in person.
WSA. Hey, good morning, Michael.
Hey, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Thanks to your guest for coming on the show today. I've been appreciating what you had to say, not necessarily agreeing with it all, but...
What don't you agree with?
Well, I'll get into that in a minute. I do want to pull this thing back to Gitmo and make a comparison to World War II in just a second here. But first, in agreement with several of your previous callers, I have for probably 35 years or so considered the most successful criminal organization in the world to be the U.S. government, followed closely by state, county, and city governments, all of which are populated by thieves and other nefarious
That's exactly right, Al.
So now about Gitmo. As I understand it, we currently, along with other places where we're holding prisoners, we currently have about 1,100 detainees or enemy combatants, whatever you want to call them. But it's my understanding that to get into Gitmo, you have to have three pre-qualifiers. One is you're not a U.S. citizen, therefore you're not entitled to constitutional protection. Number two, you've been apprehended on the battlefield carrying weapons against coalition forces. And number three, you're wearing civilian clothes.
Is that your understanding as well, Jemana?
No, actually, that's not correct at all. The first one is correct. You can't be a U.S. citizen. But the number two and number three are not correct. It may be possible that you were picked up in that way, but what we found is that some people were, again, turned over by Northern Alliance forces who were getting money for turning over suspected Al-Qaeda or Taliban. Some of the people currently in Guantanamo were transferred there from other countries, whether it's Pakistan, Malawi, Gambia, Bosnia. And so every single person in Guantanamo currently was not picked up on the battlefield with a weapon in their hand. What the caller is describing is some of the things they're trying to ascribe to being an enemy combatant, you know, which is the notion that you don't deserve prisoner of war status because, you know, you were carrying a weapon in conflict without the proper insignia or the things that would make you a prisoner of war under the Geneva Convention. But, no, there's plenty of people in Guantanamo who are not apprehended on the battlefield in civilian clothes with a weapon.
Well, I don't think you get prisoner of war status unless you're wearing a uniform of a country that's engaged in conflict with us. But,
right, and that's a different consideration in terms of whether or not somebody gets prisoner of war status. But that's the scenario you described is not a prerequisite of landing in Guantanamo.
Okay, well, I stand corrected on that. But if, in fact, we have interviewed and released thousands of people that have been apprehended under one circumstance or another, and in some cases, not all, but and not even most, but in some cases, these same people have been captured or killed back in action, shooting at our people again. So the system whereby we're interviewing them doesn't seem to be as airtight as it ought to be. But if we've got 1,100 still under custody, and they're building a prison down there to house 200, it's not beyond my ability to imagine that out of 1,100, there may be 200 that really deserve to be locked up for the rest of their lives. Now, about this, whether or not a military tribunal is the appropriate way to have these people's rights recognized, in World War II, if a German soldier surrendered and he was in uniform, he became a prisoner of war and was held until after the conflict was over. If he wasn't in uniform, he most likely got shot on the spot. And as far as the way people treat our soldiers, if they catch them in civilian clothes, they're not ever going to see a prison. They're going to be shot on the spot. So as far as I'm concerned, due process for people that are bearing arms against us and wearing civilian clothes, they got their due process because they didn't get shot immediately.
Well, I think I want to address a couple of things there because I guess I agree with some and don't agree with others. I mean, first of all, the 1,100 number that you keep using, I'm not sure where it comes from. It's very difficult to know because there's some facilities that the U.S. has acknowledged. There's other facilities that are sort of widely known or accepted to be used that they either don't let the Red Cross in or they won't acknowledge. And the Schlesinger report actually did give a number of approximately 50,000 people that at some point or another have been in U.S. custody in Iraq and Afghanistan. How many are still in custody? Again, it's a question because they won't even give an exact number of how many are in Cuba. I
know you're on a roll. Excuse me, Jemana. We've got less than 1 minute to the news, and I hope you're on a roll, so I hope you can stay with us for a little bit of next hour. Is that possible?
I can give you a little bit, but because I do want to address a couple of the other
okay.
things that the caller said.
Great.
Hey, Mike,
okay.
I'm going to take this off the air. I'll listen.
Good. You have an use another 15 seconds or so, and then we got to cut break for the news, Jemana, and then we'll come back in 6 minutes after that.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's right in the sense that if you take up arms on a battlefield, you can get shot, and that you don't have status as a protected person, but soldiers can get shot, and that's absolutely the law of war, so I'll agree with him there.
Okay. We are talking about treatment of prisoners, otherwise known as detainees at Guantanamo Bay. What do you think? Give us a call on the 1 hour remaining on the Saturday special right here on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey. It's 11 a.m.
USA Radio Network News.
I'll take you to hour two of the Saturday special with your host, MZ.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
As we should, because we're everybody's favorite radio station who knows about us. Welcome to hour number two of the KSCO Saturday Special. We're talking about Guantanamo Bay detainees, and we want to hear from you.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
And we will bring back our guest, Jumana Musa, who is a representative from the Government Relations Department of Amnesty International in Washington, D.C. She is our special guest today for the first hour. And I think we've got her for about 10 more minutes of the second hour. So, Jumana, you're there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Let's go back to the phone lines now to...
Wait, can I first follow up?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes,
said.
Absolutely.
You know, in terms of, he was talking about a lot of things, including, you know, how the U.S. and others conducted themselves in World War II. And I think the thing that it's important to point out is there's a reason that we develop things such as the Geneva Convention, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and all the other laws that have come between World War II and now. And that's exactly to have a standard for behavior. And I think the other point that I would like to make is that the reason that the U.S. and others engaged in that is not out of some type of altruism or desire to treat everybody in the world very well. It came out of a desire to have a standard by which we could protect our own soldiers and citizens. And I think the best example of that is at the beginning of the Iraq War, when some of the U.S. soldiers were taken POW by the Iraqis. President Bush was on TV immediately saying that these are prisoners of war, they deserve to be treated as such, as we will treat any of your prisoners that we take into custody, and, you know, if they are in any way mistreated, we will consider them war crimes and prosecute.
I have received a very beefy email.
A
very beefy email. It says, MZ, your guest has taken the Thomas Sowell, is that right, Sowell, S-O-W-E-L-L, statement, or Sowell, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, that many of these so-called thinking people could more accurately be described as articulate people whose verbal nimbleness evades both evidence and logic to new, heretofore unimaginable levels. Where do I start? Number one, what the heck does she mean by customary international norms? You want to answer that real quick?
Absolutely. Customary international law is recognized as laws that have risen to the level whereby you don't have to have signed on to a treaty or passed the law for them to apply. So if it's something that's located in enough treaties and enough countries, it becomes customary international law. And examples of that are prohibitions against slavery. Like, some country can't pop up and say, well, we never signed, you know, any type of agreement or don't have any laws that prohibit slavery, therefore we can do it. It's always considered illegal. Genocide. And torture rises to that level. So it's well known in terms of, I apologize for using a term of art, but for lawyers who practice in international law or people who know international law, customary international law is things that have become so established that there are norms that apply to everybody.
Okay. Here's item number two. Has she read the Uniform Code of Military Justice? Yes or no?
Yes, actually I have.
Okay. What article and sections are being violated with respect to the prisoners at Guantanamo?
Well, any one of a number of them, including some of the ones that Charles Grainger was convicted of yesterday when they talk about maltreatment of subordinates that could qualify as that. I do know in terms of the military commissions, the federal court recently said that they can't go forward without complying with more of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, including the ability to both hear and challenge the evidence against you. In their current form, the military commissions say that evidence can be presented in closed sessions where the detainee is not allowed to be in the room and their military attorney cannot share with them what happened in that room. So they'll never know what evidence was presented against them or have the ability to counter it. And there's any one of a number of other provisions that could apply that maybe are not applying right now.
Third question. What does she mean by, quote, set up a different regime for citizens and non-citizens, end quote?
Well, in terms of international fair trial standards and what's accepted as fair in the law, you can't have a crime by which, you know, you would prosecute citizens and non-citizens differently. And what we've seen, for example, even if it was in the United States, if we say an assault charge in the United States, if you're an American citizen, you know, gets this type of legal treatment, goes to these courts and has these type of sentences. But if you're a non-citizen, we'll set up a different court with lower standards, longer sentences, and you don't have the opportunity to, you know, fully challenge the evidence against you. But that's what we've done. There were U.S. citizens picked up in Guantanamo. In Afghanistan, in some of the same circumstances that folks who are currently held in Guantanamo were picked up in, but they were never subject to the same legal.
Well, the emailer goes on to say here, it seems to me that special privileges are always afforded citizens of a nation or country and reserved for them and not citizens.
That's true. I mean, there's no question about that. Non-citizens can't vote. Non-citizens cannot run for president. Non-citizens, there's a number of things that non-citizens cannot do in this country.
But not be treated fairly is not one of them.
Well, that's a fundamental violation of due process.
Okay. There's a couple more things here. Your guest said that it is hard to expect that other countries to extend courtesies to us that we haven't extended to them. What country do the prisoners at Guantanamo represent? And has their country and or government spoken to ours to facilitate their release and or question their treatment? Good question.
Certainly some countries have. There have been citizens of over 40 nationalities held in Guantanamo. So, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Australia, Britain, Sweden, France, a number of countries. I mean, I'm not even coming close to naming all of them. Yes, some governments have negotiated with the U.S., and most currently the U.S. announced that they are going to be releasing the remaining 5 British citizens who are in Guantanamo back to the U.K., as well as one of the Australian citizens, Mamdouh Habib, who will be released back to Australia. Which brings up another question, being if you've got a number of people who are being held in Guantanamo, and certain countries certainly have better relations with the United States, the ear of the United States, have better ability to negotiate on behalf of their citizens than others, and it adds another layer of discrimination in the process in terms of
But that's okay. I mean, shouldn't that be expected? And what's wrong with that? Is what I would say, even if they have better relations with us.
Well, I will say one of the reasons is when you look at the military commission as they're proceeding. Currently, there's 4 people who are charged. 2 are from Yemen. 1 is from Sudan. 1 is from Australia. It's been clear since the beginning of the process that the Australian citizen has had more privileges in terms of his case going forward before the military commission than the other 3. And again, it's an issue of due process.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. That's just a law. I don't know if it's a law of physics. It's a law of life. I mean, when there's a line, some people go before others, and somebody has to determine. Sometimes it's alphabetical. Sometimes it's who has better relationships.
That, but if you're trying, the United States is trying to hold this out as a legitimate legal process. Yet if there's even discrimination within the system itself based on, do we like your country? Are we friends with your government? That in and of itself is a clear indication of injustice in the system. Mm-hmm. If you want the system to be recognized by the world as a full and fair you need to actually conduct yourself in that manner.
Okay, back to the email here real quick. I could go on and on, but I can't write down the verbally nimble comments that issue from your guest's mouth fast enough. By the way, number 5, where was Amnesty International when Janet Reno cooked those poor people in Waco? To the best of my knowledge, they were, in fact, citizens. And 6, where was Amnesty International when the Clinton thugs kicked in the door of that nice family in Florida and grabbed alien Gonzalez and sent him back to Cuba?
To be honest, I was not with Amnesty International at the time that either of those things happened. At the same time, I think it's important to remember that AIUSA, which is the U.S. section of Amnesty International, which is who I'm employed by, is not the only one who does work on the U.S.,
uh-huh.
So it's possible that other sections have done work on those issues. I don't know, so I apologize. I can't speak to that.
Right. Okay. Let's go to see if we can take a call here. How about Mike in Santa Cruz, a different Mike, not Santa Cruz Mike. This is just Mike in Santa Cruz here. You're on the air, Mike, in Santa Cruz with Jemana.
Good morning.
Hey.
I listened to this, and I believe that if we adhered to what Amnesty International wants, we might as well give up with the terrorists.
Why do you say that?
Because, very simply, the reason they don't claim a country, the reason they're doing it the way they are, is so they can skirt the system. They do this on purpose. And if... There's reasons why the Geneva Convention is done, but when we have countries that don't want to, they're not wanting to play by the rules. We have.
Okay, so what you're saying is that if other people don't play by the rules, why should we? Good question. Answer, Jemana.
Well, I mean, the easy response to that is the United States and no nation should conduct their foreign policy based on what other people do.
Okay.
I mean, I know it's even sort of a basic tenet of growing up. If I came home and said, well, so-and-so gets to do this, my mom would say, well, you know, I'm not so-and-so's mom.
That's nice and simplistic, but where I disagree is they are not being murdered. Yes, okay, someone pulled their hair out because they had to listen to music for 24 hours. They're still alive. Our people are having their heads cut off because we put underwear on someone's head in Abu Ghraib. There is no relativism to this. And I say we hold them until somebody wants to claim them.
I'm not going to make an argument of moral relativism, but I will say there's been a number of deaths in custody. As a matter of fact, a United States soldier got convicted of killing an Iraqi just yesterday.
Okay, well, look what we did about it.
I'm
but
sorry?
We're fighting.
He said, look what we did about it.
See, we actually did something about it. Do you
and
think
absolutely.
They've done anything about the beheading?
And I have to say that's one of the most important things in terms of if you look at this behavior, whether it's issues of torture, whether it's issues of deaths in custody, one of the most important things in terms of addressing the issue is accountability and prosecuting those who are responsible. And I completely agree with you. But again, this is not an issue of relativism. There are armed groups all over the world who will commit atrocities. That doesn't mean that that's the standard by which the U.S. government should set their policy.
But leaving them locked up where they get fed and they're comfortable, reasonably comfortable, is no comparison to lopping their head off because they take them captive.
And there's no question. I'm not trying to draw that comparison.
And the fact that we're not killing
them,
the fact that they're sitting there
is
we're so far beyond what we're already doing for them compared to what we get. It's a joke. We're doing enough, probably too much, if we plan on winning this war on terror. They have to know we're serious. We have enough of them locked up that are never going to get out. It will change their attitude the next time they decide to go pull this stunt.
And well, again, is the idea of preventative detention. And that's something that's just abhorrent to any notions of jurisprudence and justice and the law, especially in U.S. law.
I could not disagree more. It's very easy for other countries like France and Sweden to disagree with us on their high and mighty platforms when they don't do a damn thing about anything. And that's the problem. We cannot set our standards. We cannot worry about that. We're not murdering these people. And the only way we're going to make any headway on this war against terror is the way we're doing it. And as far as I'm concerned, we're probably being too fair.
There's even experts who have left the CIA who said the exact opposite of what you said. What we've seen is the number of terrorist incidents have increased. That's by State Department numbers, not by Amnesty International numbers.
Of course they've increased because we've gone into Iraq.
We've invested ourselves. Has made the situation worse.
We're trying to kill the animal. We could have sat back like Mr. Clinton did for 8 years and do nothing, and terrorism just blipped up here and there. Yes, it's increased, but they're fighting for their very livelihood. This is exactly what we wanted to have happen.
The CIA just issued a report that says, without even getting to those issues, I think you're still not addressing one of my fundamental points, which is that when we start to act this way, we give the green light to other countries to act this way way in relation to our own citizens.
No, we don't. Us holding
and what I would like to know is, as much as you're saying, well, what we're doing is not as bad as what they're doing, what do we say when a government comes to us and say, so what if we got your citizens locked up? What we're doing is no worse than what you're doing. And what arguments do we have to make at that point?
I don't think I think your facts are not even close, because what countries have come to us and said that we haven't negotiated with? It's the ones that no country's claiming that we need to lock up and keep locked up.
But the part that we can't... No, that's not even necessarily true. But, I mean, I think you still haven't addressed the point that I'm trying to make, other than the fact that we have countries all over the world now where we used to be able to be a positive influence on issues of human rights. We had somebody in Sudan saying, who is the U.S. to talk to us about what we're doing in Darfur? Let them handle their own situation in Guantanamo. They have nothing to say to us.
That is
so completely... We've gone from being a positive force for human rights in the world to having the reputation of justifying human rights abuse.
You know, you've bought into the line, because I was in Europe last summer, and, you know, you can hear this anti-American sentiment from the socialists all day long. But
well, you can
people,
call it socialist, but I will tell you, there's been a number of former military that have complained about exactly this particular regime that the U.S. has put in place, saying it's putting our soldiers in danger. I would really be remiss to hear you say, I'd be amazed to hear you say that those... Both former and current soldiers, military folks who know the system and know why it's in place, are a bunch of sort of bleeding heart socialists from Europe. These are U.S. soldiers who know the system, who knows the laws, who knows why they're in place, and knows why we need them.
People with politics disagree on things, but I will tell you that attitudes in Europe and around the world have not changed that much, but our press's ability to amplify it has increased. I've been going to Europe off and on for 35 years, and there's always been an undercurrent of anti-American sentiment that's purely based on jealousy, and it has not increased. It is complete hogwash, and if we're afraid to take a stand because of what someone else might think,
I think
we're doomed. And your attitude of complacency
to take a stand based on what
and
someone
kissing
else tail
think.
But
is
for the
not
U.S.
going
to go and undermine
work.
The very laws that we set our system by is a problem not just for the rest of the world and their impression of us, but for the way our system goes forward.
Mike, you really can't argue with that. With what
but
said.
I can, because there's fallacies in what she's talking about. And as long as we want to work, if we're going to continue to stay, if we want to stand on principle and put everyone through the trial system, and we'll be so bogged down, we will never get anywhere on this war on terror.
We're already bogged down with all these.
We're
cases.
Not killing
there
them.
There's so many court cases. There's so many lawsuits against the government currently.
Oh,
there's
so what?
So many issues.
Thanks
to
the ACLU, you will always have lawsuits against the government.
No. You keep wanting to sort of play it both ways, but the government is currently bogged down in this issue, including the fact that it's widely acknowledged there's hundreds of people right now in Guantanamo that have no business being there, and they don't know what to do with them. I think a prime example of that is the ethnic Uyghurs from China. They were picked up in Afghanistan. They were in Afghanistan because they were fleeing persecution in their own country of China, which has been widely known to persecute the Uyghurs, and we know China's human rights record is not stellar. They're currently in Guantanamo. They want to release them. They've already acknowledged, and rightly so, that they cannot be returned to China because they will face torture, death, or other types of persecution, and they can't find anywhere to send them. They've dug themselves into a hole on this one. It's absolutely the right decision to not send them back to China, but now that we've labeled them the worst of the worst, and they really probably should have never been there, what do we do with them?
Well, I think to change the whole system based on what you just said would be ridiculous.
Mike, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. Dave Allen's up next. Let's put Dave on.
I actually have to go now as well.
Oh.
What?
Okay. Well, Dave, sorry. Jemana has to go. But hey, Jemana. Maybe the cell phone. Can we talk to you on the cell phone, maybe? Because you're using technology?
I do have a cell phone, but...
You don't want to give it on the air. Now, we can put you on hold.
The hands-free portion is not working, so I won't be able to drive and talk to it. But
okay.
I just have to go pick my sister up from the airport.
All righty. Well, thank you for being with us. We had a great hour and 10 minutes with you, so we wish you the best and appreciate your participation in the Saturday special.
Thanks very much.
Okay, there goes Jemana Musa from Amnesty International in Maryland. Dave, what were you going to say, or what are you going
to
say?
It's very nice to be idealistic. Problem is, I want to know what's happening to all the American tourists, the college kids that made the unfortunate decision by a small little piece of hashish while traveling in Turkey. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Or Mexico, where you have to pay to get food in jail.
Well,
and pay people to keep you there, of course.
Yeah, that's not good, and I'm sure if Jemana was here, she would say two wrongs don't make a right.
Well, then why don't they get their butt down to the other countries and start doing something? You know why? The other countries, they would be in jail, too. Only in America can they say this stuff, cause all this grief, and get away with it by claiming, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, whatever. Fact is,
do you think that the people should be held in Guantanamo indefinitely without being charged and without being having any kind of trial?
Well, they're not going to be there indefinitely. They're called prisoners of war. Now, this war is terrorist war where people don't wear uniforms. We don't know what they are. They have the war badges. They have a uniform. They don't have a hat. They don't have a flag. So, therefore, when they're caught with their pants down, so to speak, they're called prisoners of war. They're not being tortured. They're not being fed pumpkin slop with big darts in it. They're given three meals a day.
If anything, they might be being treated better than if they weren't there, huh?
Right,
there
exactly.
are probably some of them.
Exactly.
Anyhow.
Now, nobody likes to be locked up in a cage. You know what? We're not sawing their head off like their buddies are.
Yeah.
You know? We're not going around saying death to the Jews. You know? Death to the American devils and the imperialist bastard capitalist pigs.
Yeah.
You know? The hypocrisy is astounding. Now, I'm not a big old giant flag waving pro-Bush do or die kind of guy. I think Bush is full of crap too. But on the other hand, this is a problem that's going on. And these people are cowards. This war is because they send little kids down to blow themselves up.
Okay, so would it be correct to say that you're perfectly happy and pleased with the Guantanamo?
The war. Now,
okay, so the answer is yes, right?
Yeah, the prisoners of war.
If the answer is yes.
Yeah, when the war's over, they'll come out.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you. Appreciate your call to the Saturday special. KSEO's Dave Allen. Let's go to Ken in Salinas on the cell phone for 29 minutes. Thanks for waiting, Ken. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. My question is what right do they have to be tried by the United States Military Code of Justice, the United States legal system, and our civil rights when the countries that are, for the people that are down there, when the war started, when we removed Saddam Hussein, they didn't have no government. They're getting ready to have a free election here at the end of January. So when their government is up and running, we could just automatically just slowly start transferring them back to Iraq to go through their legal system.
Why? And that's, okay, so that, and that's what you're recommending should be done, probably, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm recommending should be done.
Okay.
So why is Amnesty International, the ACLU, is getting into where they have to go through our legal systems?
That's a very good point. I wish Jemana was still with us here to answer.
Yeah,
that.
Because if being a detainee, we could just be holding them, and to, just like for the people that are down in Guantanamo Bay, not all of them were captured by U.S. soldiers.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Ken, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. Now we're going to go to Gary in Live Oak. Gary, you're on the air on AM 1080 KSCO.
Yeah, hi. Amnesty International is the best funded non-government organization that's endorsed or part of the United Nations. Their major purpose is agiprop, which is to promote the UN's International Court at The Hague. Their director, I've got a book here that's called The Shadows of Government, The America Decline. Let's see, The Council on Foreign Relations and the America Decline. Turns out that their national director is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, as is their chair for their National Advisory Council.
I used to always think that anybody who talked about the Council of Foreign Relations was a conspiracy nut. And now I only half think that. I'm moving in the direction where I'm starting to think that there really is a conspiracy to get this country to not be a free country anymore.
They're incredibly powerful. They were founded in 1919, incorporated in 1921, and their purpose is a world government. If you their organizational membership is there, it's they're like the SS of the New World Order, and it's like going to a play and seeing the list of players. And
Gary, do you think we'll be able to do a Saturday special on the U.S., UN versus not the UN? Should we be part of the UN or should we not be part of the UN? Do you think we get good, competent people on both sides of that issue to participate in such a program?
I think they're out there.
I think we get a lot of people who would be against the UN and thinks it should be kicked out of this country and that we should get out of it and that it should, and probably hopes that it would dissolve altogether, though we don't have much to say about that. I wonder if we could ever find anybody who would come on KSEO and argue that the UN is good.
Well, we had four UN organizations put together Agenda 21 here, the San Francisco, Santa Cruz, New Haven, and a couple of other ones.
There is nothing more evil than Agenda 21, ladies and gentlemen. Take it from me. And I'm not even that schooled in it. I believe that.
Our first day parade that we had here this last, I don't know how many people knew that it was dedicated to the United Nations. We just had full page ads in most of our newspapers here on, you know, the humanist, whatever it is to replay. Yeah, it just goes on and on, virtually everything in the community.
Well, help us. Can you call us and give us some suggestions about, good, competent spokespeople? Because we'd love to do it. I would love to do a Saturday special on that topic. And I've already given my feelings about it. And I would certainly welcome somebody who could convince me that the United Nations has any semblance of good to it. But you know, maybe there is.
Yeah, I think you'll find that there should be quite a few people that are very good at arguing for the United Nations in addition, because
who would deign to come on to KSEO? That's what I'm talking about.
I'll put some names together and go through some of my books. So some
thank
of the
you.
Biggest advocates and shoot it over to
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it, Gary. There goes Gary in Live Oak. Here comes Pat in Santa Cruz. after 48 minutes. We apologize, Pat, but thanks for holding.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Interesting show, as you often manage to do.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on, well, first thing, I just want to put this out and then move on. I think our country behaves rather offensively when it's outside its own borders, and inside its own borders, it behaves rather, well, it's kind of a pushover. I mean, immigrants.
Yeah,
come,
because of all the political correctness inside the border,
yeah,
but
I mean,
outside the border,
immigrants come here, make outrageous demands and get away with them. Meanwhile, we take people off the street in other countries and throw them in Guantanamo. I mean, something's really haywire there. Now, having said that, I wanted to discuss. When I was in the Marines, you know, I went in there kind of naive, believing in the Marines hymn, and I don't want to be too corny.
Did you
here,
get a desirable discharge from the Marines?
No, I got an undesirable discharge, and they wanted they offered to upgrade it for me to honorable, and I told them I considered it was honorable in the first place because I left there because of misleading recruitment, misleading advertising, and I didn't want to participate in it. When I was in the Marines, I was in I went through boot camp, I went through infantry training, San Diego MCRD, I went to Camp Horno at Camp Pendleton, and I was told when you get a suspected Viet Cong, a Charlie as they called them, don't you interrogate them. You hand them over to the ARVN, meaning our puppet army in South Vietnam. They say, you hand them over to the ARVN. They'll know what to do with them. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, what they did with them was typically take them up in a helicopter, push them out one by one with the hopes that maybe somebody knows something and will talk. All right?
Okay.
Operation Phoenix. Look it up on the Internet. Anyway, I got my ass out of there. No apologies to anybody. Now, I don't want to see our country behave like that. Obviously, there's going to be scumbags in the world, and us being a scumbag because they're a scumbag, I mean, sorry. That's no good. We are the superpower today. Superpower, by definition, can whip any conventional opposition's butt. So the opposition obviously has to turn to some other way in order to fight a superpower. And that typically is what is known as guerrilla warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does it when they're the underdog. Everybody. When we were in a revolutionary war against Britain, we were the guerrilla army. We didn't necessarily go out there in the battlefield in red uniforms, and we thought the British were rather silly for having done so ourselves. No, we were in civilian clothes half the time, right?
Yes.
Were the British entitled to put us in prison and hang us upside down until we crapped and the crap ran down our faces? That's what we were doing at Guantanamo. We talk about putting underwear on their heads. No, it gets much worse than that. Much, much worse.
So what are you saying? Boil it down.
I'm saying, this country's, you know, if we're gonna play like that, let's just talk about it and not pretend that we got the high moral ground.
Okay, all right.
And, guerrilla warfare is what the underdog does against a superpower. It's all through history. It's nothing new.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I'm endorsing Mohammedism. I'm not.
You're just saying be honest.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Pat in Santa Cruz. Great to hear from you. Here comes Richard N. Watsonville himself. Richard, you're on the air on KSCO.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Fine. We missed you last week.
Yeah, it's always fun to follow Pat, though. I mean, I love hearing that story about how he went to Vietnam and then came back because the Marines were not as advertised, huh? Is that great or what? Only in America.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known people that went to Guantanamo Bay or Okinawa.
Yeah.
And soon to be Garcia Diego or Diego Garcia, I guess that rock out there in the Indian Ocean. It's the same thing, man. It's a holding cell.
Uh-huh.
It's not, in other words, if you did something really bad in the war zone, you were going to Okinawa, and from there you were going to a place like Leavenworth,
uh-huh,
a federal prison, you know, where they actually detain you. But if you get stuck, you know, if you get sentenced to Okinawa, or you get sentenced to Guantanamo Bay, I had a friend that stole the jet. He was a jet mechanic in the Navy.
Yes.
And he actually stole the jet, and he got 6 years there at Guantanamo Bay with hard labor. Now, these guys are not even getting hard labor, man. Guantanamo Bay is nothing more than a naval station.
I know that.
Run by Marines. They take the...
So, do you have any problem with the way things are going on right now?
No, I think it's just great.
Okay.
I mean, that Santa Cruz Mike, what a nutcase.
Santa Cruz Mike is a nutcase?
He said he wants to break Islam's back. Are we going to do that, Mike?
Well, the other person called him on that. I didn't, but I'm listening. I listened to what he said.
I
don't want to come right out and say we should break Islam's back, but
Are we going to? Are we even going to make a dent in it?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, where was this lady from?
Jemana Musa.
She's very educated.
Very educated and very smooth, and she works for Amnesty International, Washington D.C. office.
And when you're talking about the surveys, why don't you bring up the fact that these stinking surveys, radio surveys, TV surveys, newspaper surveys, all they're forced to dictate on how much the commercials and the advertisements are going to cost.
Yes.
That's basically all it's for.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know about that.
It's not to dictate who's listening to what.
Right.
Nobody cares about that except advertising agencies.
Right. Exactly.
But the Guantanamo, I wouldn't mind that duty, actually, if I had to go to Guantanamo Bay, be out there on the island and in the sand and all that stuff. I mean, these guys
you
are
wouldn't
getting...
You wouldn't feel bad that people were being detained without being charged and without being tried?
No, I mean, it's all over the place, isn't it?
Well, that,
I mean, we're hearing stories of little kids being scooped up by deviants down in these tsunami hit areas, and being sold off as sex slaves and different types of slavery.
Let's see if Rory in Watsonville.
See if he agrees.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. I'll see you later, man.
Oh, you don't have to go, but if you want to, you can. Rory, you're on.
Yeah, I actually agree quite a bit with Richard and Dave Allen. I think that the reason I called was that the guest made a comparison that the Sudanese government would say, well, how can you call us on the carpet about what's going on in Darfur when you have detainees in Guantanamo?
Yes.
When there's wholesale slaughter by the Muslim Sudanese government against Arab government against the black Christian, predominantly Christian, southern Sudanese. I mean, wholesale slaughter, killing, running people off the land, famine, etc. I mean, there's no comparison. And I go back to, I think it was West Side Al said, hey, these people aren't in uniform. We don't know where they're from. Okay, they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. If they're there by accident, like that group of people from China, well, they'll get it sorted out over time, but it's not... I mean, it's about being...
As long as they're not being tortured.
They're still being treated better than the enemy would treat them.
Absolutely. And what about this Darkawi guy? Who's he? Where's he from? Are we going to treat him with kid gloves because he doesn't have a uniform and Amnesty International thing?
I want to see Saddam Hussein get written back in as a write-in candidate. I want to see that happen.
I've
had enough of this nonsense.
All right, Richard.
All right, see you.
Bye-bye.
Anyway, that's what I think. I think, follow the protocol for detainees, prisoner of war. They're technically not prisoners of war because they don't have a uniform.
All right.
They flat out, how can we call them prisoners of war? We don't even know who they are and where they're from. We know they're in the field trying to kill our guys who are there trying to kick out or extricate the terrorist network that set up in Afghanistan that was funded by Hussein. Okay, there's clear evidence that there was funding going on there between Hussein and the homicide bombers in Israel and Al-Qaeda. I mean, we're there because of what happened to us, and it should have happened a whole lot sooner when you look at what happened to the USS Cole and all the other baloney that happened when Clinton was sitting on his duff, in the Oval Office. Come on, people, wake up.
I think he was doing more than just in the
right,
Oval Office.
But I mean,
you have to be fair.
Right, but ACLU and the Amnesty International people will talk you to death while your enemy overcomes you.
All right. Now, there is. We did receive an email from whitepaper@AOL.com that says, in the subject line, Amnesty International is a front for the world government.
Yeah,
now, I wish that she, that the guest was still with us here. But
well, Michael, she would have sidestepped it. But hey, good program.
Okay.
And I'll keep listening.
Why? Thank you. There goes Rory. Here comes Malcolm, who's waited 17 minutes and 49 seconds. Thank you, Malcolm.
Hi, Michael.
You're on KSEO now. How you doing?
Great, and it's a wonderful program. And I'm sorry, like your previous caller, that lady is still not there. What I would like to suggest...
Well,
to you,
she actually gave us more time than she said she would, because
understand.
We only expected her to be with us for an hour, so that was nice.
Yes. Well, for yourself and for your listeners, I would recommend reading a book called The Sword of the Prophet. The Sword of the Prophet. It was written, copyrighted in 2002, and particularly the three chapters on jihad, and some of the history of jihad. The Muslims are much more dangerous to the United States than ever communism.
So do you agree with Santa Cruz Mike that the Islam's back must be broken?
Oh yes, absolutely. If we don't, they'll break us.
Wow.
And all I can say is read this book. It's very well written, and it's got facts and numbers and dates and names and everything. You will come out of the experience terrified, but a lot better educated. Quite frankly, most of the Muslims in this country are fifth column moles awaiting some sort of sign or organization or event.
I'm not sure I believe that. Maybe I will believe it if I were to take the time to read the book.
You absolutely really should. This is the biggest.
I've never been a person who's into witch hunts and stuff like that.
Come on. There was most of the spies against the United States were from communist countries. You know, I mean, back in World War II, Joe McCarthy was absolutely right about the communists infiltrating the government, and at very high level.
Gee, you know, I grew up in school with McCarthy being painted as a bad man.
Yes.
Did you?
Well,
I know what you believe now, but what did you believe then? What did the public schools, presumably you went to public school, what did the public schools lead you to believe about McCarthy?
Well, what they still say about him, he's terrible, he's a monster, you know, a liar, whatever. But it turns out now with the stuff that's been released by the Freedom of Information Act stuff, he was right all along. He was absolutely right along. His problem was that he was not a very good salesman. He was an abrasive personality that got people upset with him.
I see.
And if I'm mad at you, I won't believe what you say, okay?
Ooh.
The thing that I really would like to have, well, this, see if this lady has read, your guest has read The Sword and the Prophet. You read that book and she's out of touch. She doesn't really have any idea what's really going on. Really doesn't have any idea. He's selling, you know, Easter money.
You know, I'm beginning to feel more and more illiterate every day. Because I'm reading this email. I just opened this email that says Amnesty International is a front for the world government in the subject line. It says Amnesty International is a well-funded agitaprop NGO. What does all that mean? Or are these typographical errors of the United Nations? What's an agitaprop NGO?
I don't know. I'd have to look that up, Michael.
Its major purpose is to create sympathy for support for the UN's International Court at The Hague, principally in the U.S., principally and generally in the world. Its director, appointed in 1994 for 10 years, is Council on Foreign Relations, CFR, Dr. William F. Schultz. The chair on Amnesty International's advisory council is Rose Burgunder Stoyan, S-T-Y-O-N, Stian maybe, CFR, also on the Council of Foreign Relations. Council on Foreign Relations' goal, since its founding in 1919 and incorporation in 1921, has stated that their purpose is a world government. Why doesn't the Amnesty website disclose their funding? And that's from Gary. Okay, I guess it must be that Gary. It must be Native or Gary from Live Oak who was on earlier with us. But Malcolm, thank you for waiting. Thank you for participating in the Saturday special. We have 15 minutes left. And hey, gang, if you want to give us a call, now is the time, 479-1080 or 477-1340. We've got Joe and Salinas and Millie and Rio Del Mar waiting, but let's do the commercial break. No, we can't do the commercial break quite yet, but we will do the commercial break after we hear from Joe in Salinas. Hello, Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello,
Joe.
Hello,
yeah, just barely. It reminds me of that joke, you know, that where the not very bright person was walking on the railroad tracks and saw an arm and then walked further and said and saw a leg and then walked further yet and saw a head and looked down and said, Joe, what happened?
Yeah.
And there's something really wrong with your phone because it's really.
I'm at a pay phone again, but you know, Pat, he brought up that point about terrorism and. And, you know, the United States used terrorism in the battle of the Revolutionary War. Well, we didn't go over to Great Britain and bomb Big Ben. I tell you, if we'd have done that, we'd have probably lost that war. They'd have probably sent everything that they had over there.
Yeah.
Over here. And I just want to thank you for this program. It's much better than those two that were during the week. And it's nice to have people be able to have difference of opinion without being threatened with being, you know, kicked off.
Is that what happened? Is that what happened in the During the Week show?
Not this week, but the week before.
Right, right.
The Wednesday program with Billy and then the other one with Paul Sanford.
Oh, Paul Sanford and his godless statements really upset a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, you know, Paul, you know, I mean, there were threats to the radio station. You better stifle this guy or you better watch. You might be stifled yourself. I mean, I got scared by one of the threats to the radio station from someone that I thought I knew, actually. Anyhow, thank you very much for your call. What I would do as a public service, Joe, don't vandalize the phone, but see if you can take note of the payphone owner, and then get in touch with that person and say either fix your phone or get it out because it's.
This is the DB side. We're lucky we have a phone at all. I'm lucky I'm not being shot. I'm in front of the restaurant that's been burglarized two or three times in broad daylight.
Now listen, Joe, I know you've been the very fact that you're a listener to KSCO demonstrates your superior intelligence, but it worries me to hear you with that knowledge. Making a phone call from such a place. And that's not a racist statement, ladies and gentlemen. It really is. Anyhow, Joe, thank you very much. Now we're going to take a commercial break. And stay with us, Monterey Bay, Silicon Valley, Central California. We will be back with a good 10 or so minutes more of the Saturday special. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Graff, KSCO's production director. Look, I could give you a lot of hoo-ha about how great our computer system is here. Bottom line is this. We have enough computers in this building that if our computers didn't work right, we'd be in a world of hurt. And our computers generally work pretty well. And when they don't, we can give a call to Dennis and the guys at Day and Night Computer, and they come over and fix them right away. We don't have to wait any time of the day or night. You know, that's nice for a business like ours that's so heavily dependent on computers and technology. Look, you can do whatever you want. My advice to you, though, is to call Dennis if you have a computer question or a computer problem, or if you just want him to build you a computer. And best of all, he'll save you time and money, and I suppose that's what it's really all about. The more money you save and the less downtime you have, the more profitable your company will be. If you don't have a company, hey, time is money at home, too. Remember that. Talk to Day and Night Computers. Call 465-7340. That's 465-7340. Do yourself a favor.
Here's the bad news. Credit card companies are charging up to 22% interest these days. Now the good news. If you're a homeowner, there's a good chance that you can save a lot of money on credit card debt with a tax-deductible mortgage loan, even if your credit rating is low. Hi, I'm Jim Chubb with Pacific Inland. We would love to help you save money by consolidating credit card debt with a new home mortgage. Please call us at Pacific Inland today, 475-2600. That's Pacific Inland at 475-2600, licensed by the California Department of Real Estate.
If you're in debt, living hand to mouth, tend to stress over finances, and are generally stuck in a rut, you should call this phone number and change your life starting right now. It will cost you 8.5 minutes of your time. 425-3090. 425-3090. Want to hear it again? 425-3090. Call it now. Get on the right track before you're old or dead. Do it now. Call 425-3090 and start your transformation into the new you, a happy, fulfilled person without money problems.
KSCO AM 1080, the station for intelligent people only. Stupid people must tune to another station immediately. KSCO AM 1080, the station for intelligent people only. Stupid people must tune to another station immediately.
Well, we didn't have to play it twice. Well, it's okay to play it twice, I guess. That means it's another way of stressing it. I wonder how many people who listen to KSCO have money problems. I know that the most intelligent people on the Central Coastal area are KSCO listeners, but there is not necessarily a correlation between intelligence and whether or not a person has money problems. But I am curious about that. That is a good phone number to call, 425-3090, to hear about how you could change your life. So why don't you do it, and if you have money problems. If you don't, that's cool, too. Ben and Salinas asks, 100,000 dead in Afghanistan count for nothing? A listener also says NGO means non-government organization. Thank you very much, whoever that listener is. Let's see here. 8 minutes left in the program here. And so if you want to give us a call, 479-1080 or 477-1340. If you want to fax us, it's 475-2967. Evidently, it is working now because it says you have a fax here in my hand that is dated today. No, it's not dated today. Well, up in the margin, it says 109-2005, but in the print, it says 115-05. Which should I believe, ladies and gentlemen? Anyhow, it's just going to say, it says, to Mike, departed guest, and Pat. So it must be today, right? Because it wouldn't make sense otherwise. Only one thing is sure in the war on terror. If the United States sticks purely to gentlemanly Marquis of Queensbury rules, while enemies hit us in the head with baseball bats, we will lose, and we'll lose even quicker if we try complying with rules placed upon us by France and other countries eager for us to lose. Your guest demonstrated her own hateful agenda with attempts to steer the debate away from subjects which made her arguments look empty and keep it focused on her belief that the United States is degenerating into a fascist government. That approach left callers in the lose-lose position of trying to prove we aren't Nazis. That was a nifty but cowardly approach by your guest. I'm not surprised she bailed out early. That's from Steve in Watsonville, California. Steve, look, she said, as I said before, she agreed to give us an hour. That's all she had. She had to pick up a sibling at the airport, and she gave us more time than she said she would. So that's fine. That's okay. I think I give her the benefit of the doubt on that. You don't have to necessarily agree with her. Okay, we have Loina. Loina?
Is there? Loina.
Oh, Loina. Oh, sorry. Sort of like loincloth or something, but. Yeah, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm glad I got you. I'm sorry I got to you late.
That's better late than never. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. I'm sorry, but I wanted to change the subject a little. But the caller before or your email touched on what I wanted to talk about.
What?
About the prisoners of war.
Oh,
and
okay.
About Aruga and about the supposedly atrocities we.
Yes, that's fine. Just go ahead and
okay.
I know. Yes.
It's going to be quick. As the gentleman said before, you know, we will not win this war if we rely on other sources to govern how we think and how we do the war, meaning the United Nations or the French or the Germans or wherever in Europe you want to say.
Anybody with any intelligence at all should understand that.
Yes, but they don't, do they? Especially the far left.
Well, I don't think they have much intelligence, or they are themselves evil people.
Otherwise,
it's one, or the other.
Yes.
It's one or the other.
And it's hard to get
they're
them
either
on.
Stupid or they're evil.
Yeah. One last thing before I sign off.
Yes.
I would like to compliment Kay Zierling for her commentaries. I love them. They're so straightforward. Anyone can understand them.
So do I.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, Billy Sunshine is our next caller, and he has something nice to say for a change here. Billy, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hi.
Happy New Year to you and everybody else.
Thank you. Was that the nice thing, or is it something else?
The nice thing is just that Santa Cruz Mike continues to, I think, give just really interesting calls. So I heard somebody complaining about him a minute ago. I don't get it. And I'd like to say that maybe he should even maybe be considered for hosting.
Oh, he would be great.
Don't you think?
I don't know if he has time. He's a very busy man who travels the world with his business, you know.
But he is always interesting.
Yes, that's probably why, because he's so erudite.
And the only thing I want to add to the discussion itself is, you know, you're a free speech guy, as am I.
Yes.
And that's the thing that I see truly in danger. In Bush's America, they have things called free speech zones. Are you familiar with that?
No, well, I heard it earlier in this. I heard the term for the first time earlier in this program.
Well, what it refers to is the fact that protesters are no longer allowed. The president isn't allowed to see anyone who disagrees with him, whether it's in his cabinet or anywhere else. So they have these things called protest zones where they fence in the protesters nowhere near where the president or the cameras will be. If we have free speech zones in America, we don't really have free speech anywhere.
Isn't that part of what are the Secret Service? I mean, when Clinton was president, they probably, you know, they keep everybody away. And are you saying, Bill, that they don't keep people away from President Bush who agree with him, but they do keep people away from him who disagree with him?
That's exactly what I'm saying, my friend.
Oh.
Don't you notice that? You haven't seen that? You haven't seen that? Those who wanted to
protest
the war were being told, get in line and shut up. We don't want to hear from Hollywood people. In other words, there was just a whole lot of information saying, either you're not a good American if you don't like what the president. People confused loving America and loving any individual regime.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I'm happy you brought that up. I'll pay more attention. Thanks for your call. Millie in Rio Del Mar, you're up next on the KSCO special.
Okay. I suppose it's naive to be amazed over these recent threatening phone calls you have received. Not many,
but some.
Yeah, well, that illustrates the ilk intelligence level of the caller's real redneck type.
Well, one caller was particularly angered by the fact that someone was given a forum who. I'll just say who it was. It was the person who filed the suit against, you know, the God thing. This person who's going to be active at the. I think the guy's a fool. I think or either that or he's really brilliant and trying to make a name for himself here. You know, about suing because God shouldn't be mentioned in public places and so forth. Anyhow, that's what that was all about.
Okay. Well, that's beyond. Okay. Well, we have here a nominee for the U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who approved of all the prisoner abuses stated eloquently by Pat and others.
Millie, we only have about 30 seconds left, and we have to hear from poor Liz in Felton also, who's on the line now. But go ahead.
And influenced the Defense Department early in this war. He referred to the Geneva Accords as quaint.
Okay.
It's interesting that only after the Abu Ghraib abuses hit the world news did the beheadings of American and foreign workers start.
That's interesting. Okay, Liz, what do you say? Quick.
I say that he seems to have had a very well-informed, quick-witted, clearly answering guest, and your program convinces me that the situation in Guantanamo Bay ought to be looked into. To me, as an employee for many years of bureaucracies, I say I smell some kind of sluggish bureaucracy in it.
Okay, thank you for saying it. Hey, that's it for the Saturday special. Going to be a guest host next week. Tune in and find out. Okay, I'm going to be gone for at least next week and probably be back the next week. Thanks to Rosie. Thanks to Kay. Thanks to Pilot in Command, Aaron. And see you in a couple weeks.
That's all, folks.
KSCO Santa Cruz.